Good morning, and welcome to Unity Church. In the spirit of that welcome, I invite you to reach around and greet a new friend, welcome an old friend, greet one another. And we invite you to feel free to continue the conversation when the service has ended. Unity Church is committed to welcoming everyone, especially those who've been excluded due to race or gender identity or sexual orientation. Your gifts and your wounds are welcome here. I want to extend a special welcome to those of you who are visiting or are here for the first time. We hope you find Unity Church to be a place which helps you to find and to keep your balance, a place which helps you to live a loving life of integrity, service, and joy. If you'd like to learn more about Unity Church and about our faith tradition, please do stop by the welcome table in the parish hall following the service. There you can sign up for Pathway to Membership classes and speak with welcome team members about the church and about its programs. I want to draw your attention to This Week at Unity, the insert in your order of service, which serves as an invitation and a roadmap into deeper involvement in the life of the church, and in particular to the announcement from the group that's going to be working with Habitat for Humanity, who are trying to put together a construction crew. So read that one, and there's a table and a place you can sign up. Unity Church is hosting Project Home this month, and an additional 32 volunteers are still needed to help care for the homeless families we're serving each evening. Each night we welcome approximately 20 guests, including 12 or so beautiful children, and provide them with safe overnight accommodations. If you're available to host an evening or an overnight, please stop by the Project Home table in the parish hall today following the service. 25 children and adults are needed to make and carry animal puppets as part of the Unitarian Universalist Association's General Assembly. Carrie, our religious education director, and a number of people from our church are responsible for an intergenerational worship service, which will have thousands of people in attendance, and they need some people to help with making and bearing puppets. Call Carrie Meyer at the church office or email her for further information. Join us for the last Wellspring Wednesday of the church year this coming Wednesday, May 12th, for the return of Unity's annual All Church Talent Show. Everyone is welcome in the show, as are funny talents, serious talents, musical talents, dancing talents. Whatever your talent is, we want to see it. Stop by the welcome table in the parish hall today to add your name to the list of performers. Wellspring Wednesday dinner begins at 6 o'clock. Reservations are not required, and the talent show begins at 7. Following the service, please visit the parish hall for refreshments and fellowship. There you can peruse the bookstall or stop by the pastoral care table to leave a note of care for someone mentioned in the embracing meditation. Upstairs in the Elliott Wing, the Unity Libraries are open for you to explore the diverse selection of books for children and adults. Remember, May is Unity Library Amnesty Month. Clemency will be granted for all overdue books and other items and all lost materials. We would particularly like to know if you lost something that you borrowed from the libraries, and then we can talk about how to replace them. Next Sunday, Unity's Director of Religious Education, Carrie Meyer, will be in the pulpit, and she'll be joined by Worship Associate Amy Kajowski in a service of gratitude for the volunteer religious education teachers who have made this year's ministry with children and youth a reality. Carrie will pause to reflect on the causes and consequences of our religious education program's growth in both enrollment and commitment. Those of you who have never heard Carrie should make a special effort. She is a marvelous preacher, wonderful presence, and has important things to share. Jan and I will be attending our daughter Hannah's graduation from the College of Liberal Arts at the University of Minnesota, which for some reason decided to hold that ceremony at 11 o'clock on a Sunday morning. More power to them. Next week's service times are 9, 11, and 4:30. Following the service today, Mary and I would love to greet you by the Portland Avenue doors. And once again, welcome to Unity Church. It's a joy to be together, and happy Mother's Day.
I remember once as a little girl being in my mother's arms, crying about some hurt or infraction my brother had waged against me. There I sat, sucking my thumb and crying, while my mother rocked and comforted me. The reason why this memory stays with me even to this day is that never before or since have I felt so completely safe. The pure love of my mother in that moment has fortified me throughout my life and given me the template for how to comfort my own children today. Come, let us worship together.
Thank you.
Will you open your hymnals to number 490 at the back of the book and read with me responsively these words from the great Cape Cod poet, Mary Oliver. You do not have to be good. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves.
Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine.
Meanwhile, the world goes on.
Meanwhile, the sun and the clear petals of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers.
Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again.
Wherever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like a wild beast, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things.
Please be seated. Each time we gather for worship, we set aside a moment to expand the caring ministry of this congregation. Together we recognize the cycle of life and death, the circle of love, compassion, and witness that is at the center of this sacred community. Our hearts are always with those whose primary spiritual practice is caring for young children, with those who care for family members in ill health, or who themselves live with grief or chronic pain, with mental illness or addiction. Our lives are blessed, and we are inspired by those who knowingly and with curiosity and courage face their final days. We pray for our neighbors in prison and for those who struggle to keep going in the midst of economic challenges. May the leaders of the world find the wisdom and abiding courage to inspire and institute positive change. And may we hold the leaders of our beloved congregation as they imagine and plan for our future. And will you pray with me for all these we now name? We celebrate the life and mourn the death of Maureen McKessie, who died this past week. A memorial service in her honor will be held here at Unity Church on Saturday afternoon. We hold Ginny Martin and the members of her family as they grieve the sudden death this past week of Ginny's aunt, Phyllis Taft. We celebrate the life and mourn the death of Jim Bowden, husband of member Joan Seeger, who maintained her membership here even after Jim swept her off her feet and moved with her to Dubuque. We send our healing thoughts and prayers to Benjamin Randall, Christy Randall's nephew, who's going in for surgery this week, and to our beloved Pat Argyros, who had a knee replaced this week and is suffering some significant complications following the surgery. And we wish a hearty bon voyage to 12 Unity members who leave this week for a pilgrimage to the Unitarian homelands in Transylvania. What began as an effort to reach out to people we imagined far less fortunate than ourselves has now become a genuine partnership, as friendships have been made which now are being maintained. Finally, may we stand in compassionate solidarity with our neighbors all around the world who too often suffer in the midst of habitual violence. May they and may we be instruments of a lasting peace. I now invite you to speak aloud or to hold in the silent sanctuary of your hearts the names of those you would like to remember this morning. And let us pray. Holy One, source of radiance and reason, thou whose love endows and animates our lives, we acknowledge thy presence within and among and beyond us this day. Help us, we pray, to surrender back into the source from which we come. We know it is so much more than love, the all in all, but love is the poetry which we would practice. Help us to remember those earliest days when love was all we knew. Love and hunger. Help us to be inspired by that love, to become instruments of a larger love which helps and holds and heals the world. May this be our promise and our prayer for this and every day. Amen. Will the children please stand? You probably don't know this yet, but we actually care what you think. Not just about life in general, but about the future of our church. And today, just as more than 300 of the adults have had a conversation about where we ought to go in terms of the development of our building and the facilities of our church, you are going to have an opportunity both to learn and maybe teach as we ask you to discuss the same set of issues and to imagine a church that was perfect for you. Thank you for being here. We love you. You may go to your classes. We'll sing you out. We to invite Leon Dunkley, our Director of Congregational Life, up to the chancel.
Good morning, and happy Mother's Day. High upon this altar they did place an offering, and they gathered those who loved them to their side to witness this cathedral, here our presence gathering, to sanctify this moment in their lives, as if raising hands to hold a gentle breeze. Once again, it is my pleasure, my joy, and my opportunity to introduce to you a new breath, a fresh inspiration, the newest members of Unity Church Unitarian in this in-gathering service. We've spent many hours in the Pathway to Memberships classes talking about freedom. A freedom that, as James Baldwin has told us, can impose the most rigid discipline, the integrity that calls us to our best. We spoke about reason, the reason that William Ellery Channing reminds us of, that place of mind that lets us consider the realm of the spiritual with every capacity of our human experience. And we talked about radical hospitality, that compassionate station that opens us to one another, blooming the flower within us and melting the too late snow that tries to convince us otherwise when warmth is the healthy way of growing things. I'd like to call Anna McWright, Joan Carver, Joanne Look, Mike Carlslisik, Lara Carlslisik, Colin Lewis, Heather Wells, Jane Grunewald, Charlie Mack, Angela Wilcox, Julia Reimer, and Pat Gordon Rice to the chancel. Please bring your orders of service and please form a line. Oh, I'm sorry, Emerald and Jason and Lily, please, too. And Catherine Ellen. And would the congregation please stand and read from your orders of service the in-gathering for new members. We, the members of Unity Church Unitarian, welcome you and gratefully acknowledge your choice to join with us
in our continuing religious life.
Ours is a faith which reveres the past, envisions the future, and lives with passionate moments. as we honor those who have brought us to this day, so we celebrate our newly found commitment and eagerly anticipate your contribution. This morning, we renew our covenant to seek and speak the truth, to love one another without prejudice, to respond with concerted efforts to the demands of justice. Now, therefore, united as one family, having affirmed one another in love, let us recite the article of fellowship. As those who believe in religion, as those who believe in freedom, fellowship, and character in religion, as those who believe that the religious life means the thankful, trustful, loyal, and helpful life, and as those who believe that the church is a community of helpers wherein it is made easier to lead such a life, we join ourselves together, name, hand, and heart, as members of Unity Church. You may be seated. I would also invite everyone to the welcoming for new members reception that happens in the center room directly following this service. And once again, welcome to Unity Church.
I'd like to invite Mary Bluen, representing the Every Member Canvas team, to come up and offer an invitation.
I'd like to think that it was the choir's fault. I was so sure that I had clearly indicated on the interest card that I wouldn't mind having someone call on me during the fundraising canvas. But no, the hypnotic strains of the offering music must have distracted me, guiding my hand to accidentally check the box declaring my intent to be a canvasser. Imagine my surprise when I opened the email that went something like, "Thank you for your interest in joining the canvassing team." Canvassing team? Interest? Talking to people about money? That is not me. I could have emailed back, "Oh no, I'm sorry, you have the wrong Mary Bluen offered." But I didn't. Instead, I reflected on that email. No, that's a lie. I worried a lot about that email. How was I going to tell them about my mistake? Very embarrassing. I was very much not interested in joining the team. Oh, but the more I got thinking, the more that irritating little, you know, listen to the universe voice kept telling me, just do it already. So I went to the informational meeting for canvassers. I listened to other would-be canvassers speak boldly of their reasons for choosing this role. Some wanted to become more connected with their community. Others felt the need to share their own stories of giving, and still others had strong convictions concerning the fiscal responsibilities and commitments that members make. Not one other person mentioned checking the wrong box. The facilitators emphasized the importance of connecting with others, of making sure our conversations were authentic and open to possibilities. We role-played our canvassing visit to prepare ourselves, and I left feeling prepared and really anxious. Don't get me wrong, I love to talk. But talk to people I don't know about personal matters they may not feel comfortable talking about? Ugh. I was eventually matched with a family fairly new to the church, not yet members, and still feeling apprehensive about their role here at Unity. These were people I didn't know. The evening we were scheduled to meet, the power was out in their neighborhood, so I had trouble finding their house due to the lack of streetlights, and one of the couple was unexpectedly at work. This was not an easy beginning for a conversation between strangers. Yet, sitting by candlelight with this amazing woman I had just met, sharing our stories and our thoughts, finding connections with one another, and discovering possibilities of connection to our church community. This was an unexpected and amazing gift. This was not the exchange of financial information I thought it would be. This was a rich and warm conversation. I left with a feeling that I had just passed the evening chatting with a good friend. What was the fear again? I can't actually remember. All I remember is I almost checked the wrong box. Please, make time to stop by the canvassing team table in the parish hall. Make sure you check the right box.
A few years ago, in the San Francisco Bay Area, a group of lay leaders at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Oakland, actually, decided that they had had enough of Unitarian Universalist children not knowing who they were religiously, not knowing how to tell a story about who they are religiously. So they established a week-long day camp that they called Chalice Camp. A marvelous experience for our children to get to know one another and to get to know their faith in a way that is nourishing and sustains them. Unity Church picked up on that idea, and again this year we are offering 2 weeks of Chalice Camp to the children of the church and to children beyond the church in other Unitarian Universalist congregations, or children that just think a liberal religious day camp experience would be a good idea. Not all of those children come from families that can afford to pay their way, and so today's offering is devoted to providing scholarships for children so that they can attend Chalice Camp. As those of you who worship regularly here with us know, the larger portion of the offering goes out the door each week to things we care about, to partners who work with us to bring our values to bear in the world. This week, that portion is going to support Chalice Camp. Will the ushers please come forward? We know that when we live lives of integrity, service, and joy, generosity is sure to follow.
Tonight, I prepare apples the way my mother once made them. Slender wedges with a bowl of sugar beside them for dipping, grains of glitter clinging, the thinnest line of sweetness sparkling along the outer edge. I don't know why I crave this confection this evening, or why the treat returns like seasons, or the names of apples I ate when I was young. Winesap, Cortland, Northern Spy, except that it makes me a daughter once again in her absence, as if she stands in the kitchen beside me, the knife flashing, quick as my own long fingers that have grown so much like hers, slicing these near translucent wafers I take between my lips, letting the grains of sugar dissolve in me slowly, melting against the wet suede of my tongue before I swallow and am alone again. The last crickets stitching their music across a cloth of dark that is sweet and unknown to me, yet familiar as sugar, as the girl still standing somewhere inside me, watching to see how it's done.
The Buddha once told this story about faith. A herd of cows arrives at the bank of a wide stream. The mature ones see the stream and simply wade across it. The Buddha likened them to fully enlightened beings who have crossed the stream of ignorance and suffering. The younger cows, less mature in their wisdom, stumble apprehensively on the shore, but eventually they go forward and cross the stream. Last come the calves, trembling with fear, some just learning how to stand, but these vulnerable, tender calves also get to the other side, the Buddha said. They cross the stream just by listening to the lowing of their mothers. The calves trust their mothers and, anticipating the safety of reunion, follow their voices and cross the stream. That, the Buddha said, is the power of faith to call us forward.
I was all hers as we peeled potatoes. They broke the silence, let fall one by one like solder weeping off the soldering iron. Cold comforts set between us, things to share, gleaming in a bucket of clean water. And again let fall. Little pleasant splashes from each other's work would bring us to our senses. So while the parish priest at her bedside, when all the others were away at Mass, went hammer and tongs at the prayers for the dying, and some were responding and some were crying, I remember her head bent toward my head, her breath in mine, our fluent dipping knives, never closer to the whole rest of our lives.
Thank you.
Mother's Day has always seemed to me to be a fine opportunity to revisit the dynamic tension between nature and nurture. Hardwired as we are, much of whom and how we are is genetically determined. But at the same time, it's clear as day that early bonding and the subliminal messages we receive from our mothers in the first few months and years of life have a profound impact on our emotional and spiritual health our whole lives long. All our lives there is a child still standing somewhere inside us watching to see how it's done. Our confidence in life itself, that larger hope that wakes us up each morning and teaches us to greet the day, is a direct reflection of our mother's love. It's no wonder then that mothers and fathers as well feel so utterly responsible for our children's well-being. Mircea Eliade, the most important comparative religion scholar of the 20th century, asserts that, quote, if we define religion as the systematic expression of the interplay between traditional faith and transforming hope, then hope is of the essence of religion, end quote. Understood in this way, hope becomes far more than a sentimental construct. It becomes, in fact, an essential stance, a way of being in the world which makes progress possible both for persons and for communities. Hope is not inherited, it's learned. Hope is therefore first among the gifts our mothers can give us. At best, we learn from those whom Lincoln called our angel mothers the larger hope that leads us home to love. I borrowed the concept of our larger hope from Russell Miller's The Larger Hope, which is an organizational history of the Universalist Church in America. I do not actually suggest you read it, unless, of course, you really want to know the details of the development of the Universalist Church in America. Here at Unity, we rarely explore the Universalist side of our heritage. We are an historic Unitarian congregation, still quietly struggling to come to grips with the fact that Unitarians and Universalists merged in 1961, thus tainting our previously pure assertion about the unity of God with, God forbid, the Universalists' view that we are all born into the world already saved. It's all well and good to set aside the concept of the Trinity. It's kind of an intellectual exercise. But the Universalist corrective, which denies the possibility of eternal damnation, undermines an essential and quite lucrative claim of mainstream Christian doctrine. It's therefore unsettling and patently dangerous. The old adage, of course, goes that the Universalists, bless their hearts, believe that God is too good to damn them, while we Unitarians, of course, believe that we are too good to be damned. We calves cross the stream just by listening to the lowing of our mothers. We trust our mothers and, anticipating the safety of reunion, follow their voices and cross the stream. Making use of a story attributed to the Buddha Dharma teacher Sharon Salzberg provides us with a lovely way to understand how mother love can give us the strength to cross over. By now, I know some of you are thinking, well, not my mom. By now, some of you are feeling deprived of the very love I'm trying to describe. I've been there. Like many others, I've suffered through the superficiality of Mother's Day while trying to be nice, as I make lists in my mind of all the ways in which my mother failed me, Just stop doing that. Just stop it. I have. It just isn't helpful. Our mothers and fathers are real life flesh and blood human beings. Most did and most do the very best they can. Like you and me, they are subject to the flaws and failings inherent in simply being human. Once, at our previous congregation, I preached a sermon in which I dared to suggest rather forcefully that one could not be a spiritually mature person unless and until one forgives one's parents. A general uproar ensued. Really? Led by a therapist in the congregation who felt that I had undermined the healing process by recommending forgiveness to those not yet ready to forgive. Now, I've taken some fairly controversial stands in my day, but none has been as powerfully condemned as was my insistence that forgiving one's parents is a good idea. Now, I don't mean to make light of this process. There is far too much genuine abuse for anyone to be glib about forgiveness. It can take many years of excruciatingly difficult work to recover from an abusive childhood. That said, I do still believe that in the end it is impossible to love God without forgiving first the little gods and goddesses we worship when we're young. It may help to think about how some traditions include icons in their spiritual practice. Among the Hindus and the Buddhists, as well as both Roman and Orthodox Catholics, icons serve a very particular purpose. The image of the god or goddess, the portrait of the saint, is intended to convey a set of attributes and powers which are worthy of contemplation. Now, Jews and Muslims, and many Unitarian Universalists as well, are extremely wary of these sacred images. As early as the book of Exodus, God instructs the people through Moses that, quote, "You shall not make a carved image of yourself, nor any likeness of anything in the heavens above, or on the earth below, or in the waters underneath the earth. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God." This is an admonition against idolatry. To engage in idolatry is to mistake the finite for the infinite. It is to worship not God who is the all in all, but an image which conveys God only in part, as though God could be captured or controlled, as though God's will could be bent to our purposes. The truth is that a spiritually mature person who makes use of icons in his or her religious practice does understand the essential difference between an image of the holy and holiness itself. The icon is a gate which opens to the garden, but will never be the garden in and of itself. When we are very small, our mother's love for us is all that we can know of God. But as we come to full maturity, as we come to know our parents as the very real human beings that they are, then our love for them becomes a gate which opens toward the larger hope that leads us on to love. You may be interested to know that the call to establish Mother's Day was first issued by Unitarian writer and activist Julia Ward Howe, best known as the author of the Battle Hymn of the Republic. Once the war was won and slavery abolished, Howe turned her considerable organizing skills to trying to make sure the hard-won peace would be permanent. In 1870, she penned a Mother's Day proclamation attempting to enlist the mothers of America in pursuit of that permanent peace. Inspired, no doubt, by Aristophanes' great play Lysistrata, Howe's proclamation should be numbered among the manifestos of the early American feminist movement. It reads, "Arise, then, women of this day. Arise, all women who have hearts whether your baptism be that of water or of tears, say firmly, we will not have great questions decided by irrelevant agencies. Our husbands shall not come to us reeking with carnage for caresses and applause. Our sons shall not be taken from us to unlearn all that we have been able to teach them of charity, mercy, and patience. We, women of one country, will be too tender to allow our sons to be trained to injure theirs. From the bosom of the devastated earth, a voice goes up with our own. It says, disarm, disarm. The word of murder is not the balance of justice. Blood does not wipe out dishonor, nor violence indicate possession. As men have often forsaken the plow and the anvil at the summons of war, let women now leave all that may be left at home for a great and earnest day of counsel. Let them meet first as women to bewail and commemorate the dead. Let them then solemnly take counsel with each other as the means whereby the great human family can live in peace. And each bearing after her own time the sacred impress not of Caesar, but of God, in the name of womanhood and humanity, I earnestly ask that a general council of women without limit of nationality may be appointed and held at some place deemed most convenient and the earliest period consistent with its objects, to promote the alliance of the different nationalities, the amicable settlement of international questions, and the great and general interests of peace. That is the Mother's Day proclamation. I'm sure you will not be surprised to discover that neither President Grant nor the Congress of the United States of America endorsed this particular proclamation. But over the years, here and there across the nation, groups of women and sometimes even men began to gather to grieve those who had fallen in the war between the states and to contemplate the possibilities of peace. Meanwhile, in West Virginia, Anna Reeves Jarvis, an Appalachian housewife who had become deeply involved in what was in organizing what she called mother's work days during the Civil War, took up the task again. After her death, to honor her memory and to encourage families and neighbors still divided by the war to work toward reconciliation, her daughter, also named Anna, continued the work. The tide began to turn toward national passage of a proclamation in 1906, when Philadelphia merchant John Wanamaker, an evangelical Christian and peace activist, who had made a fortune founding one of the first department stores in the country, took up the cause. Now, it may have been a completely altruistic gesture on his part, or he, being a marketing genius, may have foreseen the possibilities that Mother's Day portended. By 1912, 45 states had established some semblance of a Mother's Day, and then finally in 1914, Woodrow Wilson declared that henceforth Mother's Day would be held on the second Sunday in May. But the Mother's Day that he declared asked that we celebrate it by providing breakfast in bed and that Americans take advantage of the day to express their gratitude for the role that women play in the family. It did not, you see, reflect the radical feminist agenda which Julia Ward Howe had intended. Now here we are almost 100 years later. Mother's Day has been dumbed down into a sentimental nudge, suggesting that we use the day to do what we ought to be doing every day anyway. Anna Jarvis, who worked so hard to make the day an opportunity for reconciliation, became increasingly concerned about the commercialization of Mother's Day. She actively opposed the movement to sell cut carnations so that every mother in America could wear one on Mother's Day, and also the use of greeting cards, which she declared to constitute, quote, a poor excuse for the letter you are too lazy to write. I had four people come through the line after the first service saying they were on their way home to write a nice long letter. to their mothers. It's easy to see that the holiday falls far short of the aspirations of those who first conceived it. But I suggest we celebrate it anyway. There is always a need for reconciliation between mothers and their children, among families too long divided and too far from home, and among nations whose struggles for primacy and profit still too often lead to war. Let us then pray for peace, even as we practice gratitude for those who calmed our fears and dried our tears and taught us how to see beyond ourselves in the hope that our lives might lead us to a larger love, that love which holds and heals and helps us on our way. May it be so, and amen. When we are very young, our mother's love is all that we can know of God. But as we grow, we come to know that there is something beyond ourselves, within ourselves, which calls us to a larger love we first learned in her arms. Happy Mother's Day. God bless you.
Our final song this morning is called Bambalela, which is translated into the words, never give up. It is a sing-along, and we invite you to sing with us. There are three voice parts that we're going to sing to you first, and you sing back. And in Unity's May theme of hope, we added a third verse, which is never lose hope. So we'll sing the bass part first.